everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here for the last time in 2014. I'm never going to do it again this year. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And in the studio with me, Julian Joiello and Ben Starr, as we keep bringing you ideas, things that we work on. We have this new factory of thinking. I like the way it's going. Today we're going to bring you a very interesting subject which has to do with the day itself, which has to do with New Year's Eve. Now, you would imagine I would talk about resolutions and ending things and forgiveness and stuff like that. That's what everybody else must be doing. But no, I want to focus on one specific part of the end of the year, which has to do with the end of your relationship, if you had such a thing. It may have been this year or the year before, but come the end of the year, that's usually when the focus of that comes about. And you begin to see that and you say, about that person. Because around this time of year, people linger. They hunger. They don't linger. They hunger to be close to someone else. It's almost like a family thing. When you were a kid, remember the family at New Year's Eve? Everybody hugged, Happy New Year, Happy New Year, son, Happy New Year, daughter, Happy New Year, mommy, daddy. That feeling was a special feeling. Somehow it set an imprint. Somehow that imprint looks to get repeated, and it does. The entire world does a thing on New Year's Eve where they say, whoever is loving you now. And so it's a chance for everybody to take a toll of who's loving them and who's not loving them. Now, this is all false. It's all artificial, of course. Because New Year's Eve has nothing to do with that. You don't. Who cares about a date? Why don't you ask that on August 14th as well, who's loving you now? But January 1st, when that ball drops, as it hits the bottom, you know, you could be feeling yourself sinking into a huge depression or some kind of an artificially induced elation, or just you could be feeling nice. So we're going to look at relationships and this past relationship and what toll it has taken on you and where it is in your life right now, if it affects you. There are some of us out there who may feel affected by this in some way. And then there are vicissitudes of relationship endings that we're also going to examine. Part of this started off with a piece of research, once again, that we came about. Ben, what happened at Yale University?
Well, they did a study of about 130 people, and they were people between the ages of 17 and 33. And they found that mate preferences don't always correspond with mate choices. That is to say, people don't necessarily wind up with the profile of person that they envisioned themselves being with or desire to be with.
That they choose, the person they choose is not necessarily the person they are designing that they choose.
Right.
So how does that happen?
Well, in the study they found that people were often willing to date somebody that they weren't really attracted to or they didn't really care for just to avoid hurting that other person emotionally.
You don't want that other person to cause to feel pain. So this happens a couple of times. This is going to also go around to when you break up with somebody, right? You think about breaking up with them and you think about the pain that they're going to go through. But sometimes somebody wants to be with you and you think about the pain that they may go through if they don't have you, especially New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, you know, Thanksgiving. I got to be with them. It's their birthday. I got to be with them.
And then looking ahead, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, looking at Valentine's Day. Well, Valentine's Day is tricky. Because you really make commitment on Valentine's Day. You know, it's not as easy for friends. But definitely on a day like this, you know, a day like, oh, I better be with this person because that's what they want. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's got a family, and the family is getting together somewhere out of town. And she's new with him, and she wanted to invite him to go meet. He wanted to go with her to the family because it's New Year's Eve, right? But her family just had the death of one of their primary members. One of the younger ones, the brother, is a 40-year-old one, just died of cancer. And so they're meeting for the first time. And he thought about it, and he said, it's so inappropriate for me to be there with them at this time. And I would like to be there. And she feels terrible because she wants him not to be alone. See, but she also wants him not to, if he doesn't want to go there, and maybe, and truthfully, she knows it's inappropriate to bring a new person into this family, especially since they don't speak English, right? Even greater difficulty. But they will try for his sake and struggle through, and so he becomes a problem. So the question becomes, how far do you go? Do you have people in your life that you take care of and you are with that you don't necessarily want to be with, but you're with it because you don't want them to feel bad?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in several relationships like that. I guess my personality type kind of ends up wanting to make everybody like me, and I end up dating a girl that I was sort of into but not really wanting to date, and all of a sudden I want her to like me, so I don't break up with her, and all of a sudden I've been in relationship for 3-6 months where I don't want to be there.
Well, Julian, wait a minute. You're such a good-looking young guy, and people could see pictures of Julian Joy. Well, just want you all to know the following. You could guilt Julian into dating you. That's what he's telling us right now. He's saying to us, if you want to date with Julian, if you want to go out with Julian, look around, tell him you feel bad if he doesn't say yes.
And you could spend 3 to 6 months with him.
Spend 3 to 6 months with him.
Well, I'm learning, but well, yeah, I've been there.
Being here has been teaching you a little too fast.
Yeah, I guess you know what I mean? I'm growing up a little too fast in this room, but I mean, my sister's always, why are you always dating these girls? They're not the girls that you want to date. I know you well, and I know who you want to be with, and these aren't the ones. And I find myself in that spot a lot, and then it always ends in this sort of place where I'm like, I'm not happy because I don't really want to be with this person.
So you're with somebody you don't want to be with, and you know, a lot of people who are married feel the same way.
Right.
I love that. I mean, this is a person I like. It's a person who is a partner, an old friend, but I'm with them because I don't want to hurt them.
Right, and that's what the study found, was that not only are people reluctant to reject a potential suitor, but that people are also concerned about causing their current partner pain by breaking up or moving on. So they avoid that. Like a person who thinks about initiating a breakup is often worried about being perceived as maybe being uncaring or cruel. Or people who are being pursued, on the flip side, who aren't together yet, people who are being pursued and are, you know, have this unrequited love being thrust upon them, they feel guilty about potentially hurting the pursuer's feelings.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm a little confused by that one. So in other words, let's say I'm Julian.
Right.
And I have a bunch of pursuers coming after me. But I know, since I'm Julian, that there are going to be a lot of pursuers. Why do I feel guilty? There's a whole bunch. You know, there's hordes.
Well, maybe Julian feels, in a way, responsible for hurting someone else, responsible for their anguish or their grief.
So you see, now Julian gave me a clue before, because he said, because I want people to like me. And since that's such an important thing in my psyche, I may tend to throw out little messages that say I can be had. You see?
Right.
Yeah, I've had girls think that I was really into them, and I'm not. And I think it's part of how I interact with people. Another phenomenon I've noticed with myself, at least, is that when someone likes me, I all of a sudden start liking them. And I don't know if this happens to you both.
That's a classic.
But I feel like this comes in what we're talking about right now.
Oh, wait a minute. So you're saying that if somebody does like you, even if you don't necessarily are not attracted to them, once they like you, you kind of find yourself a little more attracted.
I find myself more attracted than before.
Than before, for
than
sure.
Before, for sure, yeah.
So if someone comes to you bringing you a nice dish of pasta vegetarian, right? Which is like
sure.
You would eat. And they make you nice food, you like them a little better.
Yeah.
Right? And if they invite you to things, you like them a little better. And if they are affectionate with you in a certain kind of way, you like them a little better. And they grow on you. And that's what a lot of people who are attracted to people who are not attracted to them bet on. They bet on, I'm going to grow on you.
Like a barnacle.
Like a barnacle. I'm going to grow on you. I'm going to get on you, and I'll be there. And then you're going to see I'll get you a little more covered and a little more covered and a little more covered. And you're going to like my money. You're going to like how I take care of you. You're going to like this and like this.
But does that really lead to a full relationship eventually? Or is it just represent something that's been controlled by the person trying to convince them?
There we get into the world of judgment. I'm sorry. I know what you're asking. I know what you're asking. Does it lead to a full relationship? I don't even know what a full relationship is. Is a full relationship one that nobody gives to nobody and everybody loves everybody? Because
It's
one of those definitions that we have trouble with. But we're on track here, because then we're also going to have people who are going to call in who are dealing with this, which are 212-957-2729. So you're in love with somebody. In love with. Now, there's another issue. Here it gets to be New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, your mother, your father, your uncle, your brother, your past lives, your past marriage, your kids, right? Your kids are now grown up. They're 30 years old. They have their own families. They don't want to be with you anymore. You're a grandparent, and you're saying, I'm not, you know, and maybe you're living in an assisted living place. The guy down the hall looks awful good tonight. You see, the guy down the hall looks better than he would have looked any other time. Because you're coming from a place which I call a minus. You see, finding a plus for your minus is what I consider most love to be. Falling in love is when you have a minus in you and you feel a deficiency, and there's a person who has a plus. So falling in love is finding a plus for your minus. Is that going to be a Twitter?
It's like a charge. Yeah, we'll tweet that out right now.
Is that getting tweeted right?
Yeah. Falling in love is a plus for your minus.
It's like finding a plus for your minus. Finding a plus.
Like a magnetic charge.
Yes, it is, of course. Because you're feeling deficient, and here comes this plus energy coming along.
Yeah, speaking of Twitter, I just wanted to thank, we had a listener submit to us a great article on the biological and neurological nature of loneliness, what we're talking about.
Oh, great.
And he's a vet in Brooklyn, so thanks to him for reaching out. It's a great article. Armand, I forwarded it to your email, and... definitely an interesting piece. Happy New Year to him. But yes, falling in love is a plus to your minus.
Are we allowed to mention the name of people who tweet us?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Tweet us.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we'll do that. Okay, now, let's go on with this, Ben.
Yeah, so going back to this Yale University study, they found that single people often feel compelled to accept advances from undesired potential dates, so as to avoid causing those individuals pain. And not only that, but those people actually underestimated their willingness to do so. Now, what I mean by that is, you might say, oh, that, you know, that's nonsense. I would never go out with someone out of a sense of obligation or guilt. But in this study, they found that not only do people take the other person's feelings into consideration when they're considering who to date, you know, they're not just considering what am I attracted to physically, emotionally, spiritually, but they're also saying, how is this person going to feel if I say no? Those same people also underestimated the influence of the feeling of guilt or obligation. So, Armand, it's actually this subconscious thing that happens, that we want to please people. We don't want to be, you know, we don't want to feel responsible for someone else's pain or hurt. And so often we go along, even though we may not be really into it.
Well, okay, so then there comes a question. And this comes a question that you could help me both with, since you guys are honest guys. If you had to say that the palette of this was set down somewhere when you were young, whose feelings were you afraid of hurting? Who was the person where you felt? Now, when I say afraid of hurting, this doesn't have to just come out of compassion. It could come out of, if I hurt his feelings, he's going to kill me. Whose feelings did you have to take care of? And everybody out there who's thinking about themselves, they can say, you know, I really didn't want my father to feel bad, didn't want my mother to feel. Whose feelings? Do you remember? Do you remember being concerned about the well-being, somebody else's feelings, if you did an act of independence? What do you got?
When I think of a feeling of guilt regarding someone else's feelings, I think of my grandmother, because I often felt like this almost, I don't know, like she lived alone. My grandfather died before I was born. And so I always felt like she was really lonely and that I had this like obligation to be the good grandson.
Obligation to be. Where'd you get that message?
I think part of it came from her because, I mean, she often talked about.
It's got to be reinforced by your parents.
Probably.
It has to be. They have to pass it along. But I noticed since you avoided saying it was your parents that maybe there's an interesting link in there. So where in there is a link with your mother holding you responsible? Was it her mother?
Yeah, my mom's
mom.
That's
what I would imagine, sure. So your mother is holding you responsible for her mother's good feeling, and you become your mother's way of stepping out of her own guilt.
In a way,
by giving
I guess,
her the sacrifice child. You're like the kid we bring up to the altar, and you know we just lay him down and set him on fire to the gods. Here.
I don't know if I would quite put it that way.
I give you my son. My son will now love you, and this way I don't feel bad.
I did spend a lot of summers with her, you know, growing up.
Not that you necessarily wanted to.
No, I mean, I didn't.
It was okay.
It was good. It was okay. There were times where, you know, I missed my parents.
How about your friends?
Yeah, my friends too, but I always ate well at my grandma's house. She's a great cook.
It wasn't a bad situation.
No, it was not a bad situation.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are going to call us with bad situations where they were pawned off. You know, you get the grandkids. I wonder what grandchildren feel like nowadays, since there are so many of them, what they feel like being the responsible for their grandmother's feelings. Like, I know people who have got like 9 grandkids, and they live for their grandkids because their life is over and they don't want to get in relationships anymore. They're afraid of men. Or afraid of women, you know, mostly it's women who are afraid of men. Women afraid of male relationships, they don't want to get involved, it's such a mess, whereas they could go take care of their grandchildren, and this way, by taking care of their grandchildren, they don't have to get involved in any of that stuff. The kids are completely dedicated to them, especially the little boys. They love the little boys more than anything else, always seems to be, and they form relationships with these little kids, and now they become... The kids become the parents' way of buying off the parents, buying off the grandparents.
Very interesting that you say that because my grandmother has 3 grandchildren. So there's me, my sister, and then a cousin who's a male. And we always noticed, the 3 of us, that she kind of favored us boys. And so when you say that, that brings that straight back to mind.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
So it's somehow grandmothers may be filling in their needs for having a male relationship, right? Somewhere hormonally this may work, by adopting the young child, and the young child, the boy child, is sacrificed to the grandmother, which is the mother's way, the grandmother's child's way, of getting out of the mess. Hey, you don't own me anymore. I give you my firstborn. Oh, we're going to get letters. 212-957-2729. Fascinating stuff.
Interesting
stuff. Anything else we learned from this study?
Yeah, I mean, just generally that people are often less willing to say no than they think, because they are maybe subconsciously, you know, many people are what I call people pleasers. So they want others to like them. They want to maintain a good image, and they don't want to be mean. And I think a lot of people feel that just, you know, turning someone down might be mean. And at the same time, that subconsciously, this is what happens. Because a lot of people will say, well, I have no issue with rejecting someone or breaking up with someone. But it becomes harder than that on the surface, I think.
It is more difficult. And, you know... Part of what happens is, like you said, you know, people don't want to be seen that way. And I wonder, Ben, is that exactly what it is? I don't want you to see me as being somebody who could stand for themselves and aggressively stand for themselves. You know, I wonder what that's like to unfold that part of yourself. I can be mean.
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 I can be mean.
Well, that was unexpected.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Ben and Julian and I colluded on you. So that's the four of us saying the lovely Linda Vanella, who is no longer with us at the station here, is and the rest of us, we're singing this song called I Could Be Mean to Beethoven's Fifth as our way of saying everybody's got a little uncoverable part of you.
Right.
Now, but you said something very interesting in this study that I found fascinating. You underestimate the power that that guilt has on you. You know, you underestimate it, and you don't think that's what you're responding to. And I could tell you how many clients I've seen, patients I've seen over the years, who've said to me, I'm done with him. I'm never going to see him again. I am never going to see him again. I know he feels bad, but I see him for his sake, and I'm going to go see him, and I'm done with him. And then the following week, they happen to miss their session. You know, I was coming over to your office, but the dog was eating my homework. And so the dog ate my homework and the train broke and I couldn't get there that day. And the following week, something happens. Oh, I know we had this appointment set, but you know, I didn't, another dog eats the homework excuse.
It's no coincidence.
I know already what's going on. And by the time they come back, they say, yes, I had to see him again. Now, I'm not going to judge them for that. Even knowing that I'm not going to judge you for that, you still, on the inside, have your own kind of shame about it.
So were they avoiding following up with you because they were sort of embarrassed to not stand by their word? Or?
Not so much. They were caught up in their own desire to have the obsession. You see, the idea of it is you need, sometimes you just want to be crazy. Sometimes you want to be crazed. Sometimes, like a time when you're being faced with feelings like a New Year's Eve and you feel lonely or something like that, you want to have something to obsess about. So you get on the phone and you start calling your ex. And you say, yeah, I got to talk to you because we have to straighten things out because this is a good time of year. Who are you with? You know, that kind of thing. It's a time when people choose to get crazy. And the trouble with a therapist is they're going to interrupt your getting them into their crazy zone. You know, they're going to interrupt your desire to get into that compulsion.
Because they're gonna kind of give you perspective.
They're going to say, hey, so what are you doing?
Right.
Right? Hey, you don't want a therapist who does that. You want a therapist who helps you stay crazy successfully, not a therapist who helps you change. Most people do. Most people just want to stay the way they are successfully.
Right.
I want to be neurotically successful.
Because change is painful.
Change means I have no idea what's going to happen with change.
It's scary.
Yeah. Hey, we have somebody on the line who's been on the line. We don't have anybody on the line, but they are, see the way it is. Let's go back to the article. We're going to be taking calls, and I'm sorry if we held you on for too long.
Yeah, I mean, there were some of the people who participated in the study said things like, the idea of refusing made me feel guilty. Or, I didn't want to make my potential date feel rejected. And finally, I didn't want to hurt my potential date's feelings by turning him or her down. And so these are the impulses behind the sort of feelings that we're talking about. So those were direct quotes from some of the participants in the study, sort of underlining the notion that people do have a lot of guilt when it comes to rejection. And I think that a lot of this study is about a new situation, so someone asking someone out for the first time. But I think it also applies to existing relationships. You know, it can be very difficult for people to get out of a relationship that they're not satisfied with, if you see what I mean.
Sure. We have someone on the line. Let's say hello to Robert. Hi, Robert. This is Armand DeMille.
Good afternoon, Armand. You know, you touch on something interesting. Insofar as not wanting to hurt somebody's feelings, let's say in a romantic relationship, it's not somebody from my past that I identify with, but myself. I put myself in a position of the person being rejected, and think of, gee, how would I feel? So it's not like I get a lot of opportunities to, you know, reject or accept, you know, people, romantically speaking. But that always lingers, that's always at the substratum of my feelings. And I do feel guilty about that because I put myself in it. That's very strange. And the other thing I just wanted to comment on.
Let me ask you something. Did you ever go to a stripper club?
Oh, very rare.
Okay,
rare.
But now, I didn't say rare. Did you ever, was my word?
Yes, I have.
Okay, good. Now, in this time that you went, do you go to a place where the people danced for you?
Well, I never went on my own. I went with other people who happened to have picked that.
We're forgiving you. It's all right.
No, I never really got into...
not got into. Dance. I didn't say get into, but have you ever go to a place where women are saying, can I dance for you?
No.
Okay, now, in these clubs, keep in mind, in these clubs, what happens? These are clubs where these very, very attractive women say, I will dance for you. I will dance in front of you with very few clothing on if you give me $20.
Right.
Now, the idea of it is, their idea of doing this is, by the way, we've been talking about listening to Bear on the program. It hasn't been up. He's just putting it up. Bear by Elizabeth Eves was the one who did the study on that.
Okay.
So what happens is these people will approach you, and their job is to get you to give them $20, and you're going to dance for them. But in order for them to get you to dance for them, you may do it just out of your own larceny because they're attractive. But let's say you've done 20 people. They've got to go. They're going to try to convince you, and they're going to try to convince you by making you believe that you're special.
Right,
and they're going
to
look at you in a certain kind of way, and they've mastered this technique.
Mm-hmm.
And the technique is just beautiful. They could look at you from across the bar, and they could come over to you. So they just, the technique is just fabulous. Now, I knew a man who used to go to these clubs all the time. And I would say, why do you go to those clubs? What do you get out of that? He said, where else can I, a man of 65 years old, go somewhere where there are 125-year-old women and reject them? He said, just to say no to everyone, he said, it feels like such power to me.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to seduce him to get their money, and he's going there to say no to them because it makes him feel stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing in life.
Well, I'm 66.
Good, so you need to go to a club.
Well, I'll tell you. When I went to one of the clubs with a party that was getting married, so we went. And then, at that time, it was all nude.
Okay.
All nude. And gorgeous girls.
And how did you feel? How did you feel in the middle of that?
Very sexually excited.
Uh-huh.
But that's about the size of it. But I never really engaged the person because I know it's a business. But as far as love is concerned...
Okay, but your body responded.
No, I didn't.
Well, you said you felt very
sexually
excited.
I didn't pay her any money. I just looked at her because I thought she was so unbelievably sexually appealing. But that's
okay.
About
now
it.
Wait, Robert. Robert, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Don't diminish that. That's an internal feeling. You had a physiological response.
Absolutely.
By looking and saying this is attractive, your body responded. And what we're saying is, we have emotional responses on the inside that we just don't know about.
Okay.
Some of them are based on physiology. Some of them is based on sexual need.
Mm.
You know?
The other thing I wanted to comment on is, as far as the issue of love, you know, romantic love, looking back at my paucity of experiences in that area, nevertheless, at this stage of the game, I'm always mystified when somebody will say to somebody else, I love you. It's just a mystery to me because I'm just so aware of all the facets of the personality that have to jive together to a point where somebody would say, I love you. That doesn't explain anything, if you know what I mean. There's so much interplay between the different facets of the personalities involved.
Hey, Robert, can you stay with us online?
Sure.
We have to take a short break.
Sure.
I want to continue with you because we have some place to go with this, okay? We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to play you some very special music from my archives for Ben because he's never heard this, and then we'll continue on with Robert.
Sure.
A railroad fare, plane fare, train fare, boat fare. I don't have no fare, period. There's one way of getting there. I've been using a method for 25 years or more, me and old Sonny, and it seemed to have paid off.
A higher debt, man.
Just walk on.
Well, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on. I say walk on. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home. Well, your mind gets worried when your shoes get thin. You don't know where you're going, but you do know where you've been. Walk on, walk on, walk on. I'll walk on. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home. I see so many people happy, I can't get used to happiness. Maybe it is true, happiness is not for me, I guess. I'll walk on, walk on, walk on. I'll walk on. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home. Walk on, sonny boy, walk on, boy. Yeah. Can't get along. I'll walk on, walk on, walk on. I'll walk on. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back on. One more time now. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back on. Walk a little further. One more time now. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home. Let's walk together now. I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home. Hey!
Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, Walk On.
How do you like that?
It's good stuff. Sonny Terry on the harmonica.
Brownie McGee on guitar.
Yep.
Yep. How do you like it?
I like it very much. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the blues.
I know, it goes to your roots. That's why I played it for you.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Thanks. You too, Armand.
So, you have any friends who have birthdays?
I do, yeah. I wanted to just wish a happy birthday to a very dear friend of mine. So.
Oh, my gosh, almighty. Sometimes I have to laugh at myself. The reason that was so funny is because Ben says, I got a friend of mine who's got a birthday. I would love to wish them happy birthday. And I said, I don't know how we're going to weave it into the program. So I just wove it in.
Yeah. So happy birthday, dear friend of mine. He would have been 28 today. And I miss him every day.
Would have been.
Yeah.
Died.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So today's his birthday. His name's Daryl.
The Daryl.
Yeah, I've told you about him.
Yeah, the Daryl from the Daryl.
Yeah.
Who the other guy knows too, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, Daryl, here's a shout out to you. And this program goes all the way up to you if you're listening wherever you are, which I'm sure on some level the Spirit and Terrence McKenna has it all put together.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Daryl.
Okay, let's see. We've got Robert still on the line. Let's pull.
Yes, I'm still here.
Hey, Robert, thank you very much for standing by.
Okay.
Now, you were talking, the last thing you were talking about, do you remember?
I was just talking about how mystified I am when somebody uses the phrase, I love
you. Okay, you're in love, right.
Not to me, because, I mean, that hasn't happened in decades, but just in general.
Okay, so let me explain something to you about what you're seeing, number one, and then we're going to move into the fire and why it's so mystifying. First of all, falling in love is always finding a plus for your minus. Now, almost always, I can't think of an exception to it. At some level, there's a part of you that feels deficient. You're missing something. and you miss something and that thing comes along and you suddenly find it and you connect with it. And when you connect with it, you say, ah, I feel at safe. I feel at peace. The feeling of safety that people get when they find something that provides a plus for their minus is they feel this neutral feeling of safety. And but they change the words. They don't say the words, boy, I feel safe with you. Or I feel my own loving self with you. They say instead, I love you. Now, that should be very confusing. Because for you as an observer, you're wondering, oh, this is an object relation thing that we're talking about. So that's one reason why it confuses. On another level, it confuses because there's a part of you that really is not connected and doesn't want to be connected at that level. Tell me about you and love. Have you been there?
Well, I got to be frank.
I thought you were Robert.
As far as being in love, I could look back and say I was never in love,
right,
but I was fond of certain people, you know, females, but never in love.
Yeah, okay.
And that surprised me. It really surprised me because I took for granted, because I'm 66 now, but over the course of the years, I assumed that on those few relationships that I did have, and they weren't too long in duration, that, yeah, I must have loved one of them. But looking back and thinking about it, I would say that there was some girls I was very fond of, but I can't say that I ever loved anyone.
Okay,
and
well, let me take
I'm
that
not
one
sure
more
exactly
step,
what
Robert.
That would mean for me.
Robert, let's take it one more step because it's not true what you're telling me. It's not true because I know one person you loved.
Who?
When you were a child. You loved your mother.
Well, you know what? Here's the funny thing about that. That's not necessarily so. It was a very fractious relationship.
Yeah, go ahead.
Very fractious. And even to this day, my mother's passed in 2003. She died at 93 years old in 2003.
Did you live with her till she was...
No. She kicked me out when I was 18. That was the best thing that ever happened to me.
So she cared enough for you to kick you out?
No, I don't know if it was care. We were so conflictive with each other that it was intolerable. It didn't go beyond that. My mother came from... my mother was born from a Russian peasant who came to this country in the early 1900s.
Oh, Robert, wait. Before we get into the history of Russia, too, let me just stay with it for a minute. You and your mother had a slapstick relationship. It kind of goes back and forth, but you stayed connected, right?
You know, that's the irony of it. That's the irony of it. It produced a deep-seated conflict.
Sure.
You know, deep-seated conflict where I never got close to her. And only in my later years, let's say from my 40s onward, did I realize I did love her, but I also hated her.
Sure. Now let's stop there for a moment. Yes, perfectly fine. You love and you hate, which sounds like a lot of couples I know nowadays. Okay, so you have both going on, and you realize that this love has with it a tremendous pain. You know what I mean? There's tremendous potential pain if you let yourself love at that level. So what you learn to do with your mother is you separated from her. You said, I'm not going to love her that way. I'll love her from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you maintained. And that's what you still have.
It can also be argued that perhaps that's also what she wanted.
Sure. Okay.
So I think that carried over into my subsequent relationships, and it's something that's so deep-seated. It just is always...
Now, Robert, are you a terribly unhappy man?
See, there's a mix there. On the one hand, in some ways I'm happy. In other ways, I'm profoundly unhappy.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know,
let me ask you something. When is the last time you volunteered your time in the service of people where you didn't get anything as a reward?
Well, in a spontaneous sense... with certain family members.
No, more in it, something outside of your family.
You mean like I joined a group or something like that?
Like you joined a group or not even joined a group, that you went someplace and you did some volunteer work, like you went to a homeless shelter and you helped them sort out the sheets, something like that.
Oh, quite a while ago. See, I have a degree in math, a two-year degree in math, and I used to enjoy tutoring people.
Okay, so I'm asking you this question. When's the last time you've done that?
Oh, decades ago.
Okay. Robert, I got to get going. I want to ask you, could you this year go back to that? We need you in this world.
I would love to do that.
Okay, you're... Wait. Don't, because you got to start telling me about the dog and the homework. Okay, there's a way to do it. There's a way to volunteer your time. Even at a homeless shelter, you sit down and say, anybody want to learn math? I'll teach math. Or you just, anybody want to help out with their bills? I'll help you out with their bills. Anything you can do. I need you to make contact with people on a different level. And if you, and I know you're going to fight me and resent me and tell me all the problems in the middle, but that's all. It's all the time I'm going to give you. I'm not going to give you another minute more, except say to you the following thing. Wait, you want to hear what I'm going to say to you? I'm going to say to you, you're a beautiful man, and I, from this place, as confusing it could be, without having a minus in my life, I do love you. You're a beautiful guy, and I really wish that other people could get some sense of how much you have to offer. So that's why I recommend the volunteer place.
Okay.
Because they all have minuses, and you have a lot of pluses. Thanks for calling in. Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. 212-957-2729. 212-957-2729. Ben.
Armand.
Suicide. A lot of guys say, if you end this relationship with me, when a woman finally gets to the point where she's kind of disenchanted herself with a man, they say, if you end this relationship with me, I'm going to kill myself.
Do a lot of guys say that?
A lot of guys say that. A lot of guys do. And because what they're saying is the despair potential is so big for me, I don't want to face it, and I would rather end my life.
Is that something guys say to girls? And girl, are you saying
men
women,
it much more than women?
Women
yes.
don't really say that? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think women say it as much. I think some women do it.
Right.
But I think women don't say it as much. 90% of the business that comes to the DeMel Center for emotional conflict has to do with, oh my God, is that really Luke? Is that Luke calling in? We're going to take this call in just a second. 90% of the business that comes into the center is a result of a relationship ending.
I mean, I believe that.
Yeah. And because of the despair that it could send you into. And if you can't handle that despair, if you're a man who has convinced somebody to love you by guilting them, you know, by having them trapped into loving you in some way, when they pull out, when they get strong enough to say, oops, I unmasked, you know, this magician, I can see that it's not right for me, and they feel absolutely it's not right. The despair, the potential despair is enormous.
Sure.
And a lot of men, they just, you know, they put their whole thing in the security of a relationship. Let's take Luke. Hi, is this Luke? This is Armand.
Armand, good afternoon, sir.
Hi.
First time calling you after listening to you for a good 10, 15 years, if not more.
Thank you for calling in. Thank you.
You have some wonderful programs. I was really impressed with your program yesterday. And today, you raised a real strong question and strong points concerning the guilt of letting someone else down. It's really, really powerful and profound. And your last caller, the conversation reference to his mother, really, really profound stuff, man. I just wish you the best. Hope you continue. And the two guests you have on today are host or co-host.
Yes, it's Ben and Julian.
And Julian, I've heard them for a couple of days, man. They're great.
They're great, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Julian's my cousin. Ben's been an associate here just recently. We've worked together now for about how many months, guys? About
going on almost 6 months.
Almost 6 months, right?
Wow, yeah, that went fast.
Which in your lifetime is a big percentage.
Yeah, and I've been here for like over two years now.
Yeah, 2 years. So I want to thank you for that. Now, let me ask you something, Luke.
Yep.
It touches you.
Oh, tremendous.
It touches you in a place where there's a tear that's so close to happening because there's an ache. Tell me about the ache.
I don't know if I really have an ache. I've experienced both the situation of the guilt and the situation with the guy who has expressed his relationship with his mother and not realizing till later in his life that he actually loved her.
Are you that guy?
I'm one of those guys.
So you
but
didn't realize
I was able to, fortunately, I was able to realize that, I guess, in my 30s, because I didn't think there was any way that possible that I could ever love her. And I guess it was a great movie great movie that made me realize that I could, but I didn't know how.
Okay, look, so let's back this up. Before the age of 30, your mother acted like a witch. There were things she did that were just downright wrong. And there were parts of you that responded to it. And even though we will say she was a good lady and underneath it all she was fine, she did not do the best job. And in not doing the best job, you distanced yourself from her by pulling yourself all the way back to the point of almost at times hating her. Then at somewhere around age 30, you formed enough material inside you. You got strong enough to say, okay, I could see all of that back then, but underneath that behavior, I can forgive her and I could care for her. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happened. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something. Yeah. Among the things that she did the worst to you, tell me one thing that kind of stands out in your mind. Would it be a beating?
No. See, we were separated since I was kids for a long time in my life. We were separated, for a long time in my life. So
why were you separated?
Why were you separated? And that type of thing. Well, she had a problem. she had some challenges and
what was the problem?
People have problems,
Was she drinking? Was she in prison?
Oh, no, she wasn't in prison. She did have a drinking problem.
A drinking problem, right. Now, a drinking problem mother is a very difficult mother to have because you can't predict what she feels. You can't tell anything. You can't tell what it's going to be like when you come home.
Yeah.
It's an unsafe environment. It's an unsafe world.
Yeah, that's true. So, it wasn't extremely abusive. I guess if there was, at some point wish that she had made some better decisions. But it took me a long time to get past all of that. But I really, 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 really appreciate your previous caller and the conversation that you had with him because it just made me want to reach out to you and comment on how
thank you, Luke,
how important this really is.
Luke, many other people when's the last time? Too. When's the last time you've had somebody love you?
Come on, I'm not going to let you do that to me.
Why not? Why not?
I didn't really want to go this far.
You're part of this team. Are you kidding? You're such an important part of this team. Are you kidding? You're teaching everybody how safe it is to be real.
Well, listen, I didn't put it this way. I don't seem to experience a lot of people who express that they don't love me or don't have an appreciation for me.
Right.
That's not being big-headed. And,
No, I get that. I get that, sure.
It's not expressed. I'm saying that they do love me. It's just not expressed that they don't. So to ask me a question, a lot of people will say, listen, man, I show them love all the time. I love you.
But finding one individual who you get close to, who you've been intimate with, who has decided to elect you as their sole proprietor of their tenderness and love, that you don't allow too much, right?
I don't know. Repeat that.
So you're not letting anybody get really too close to you, right?
Yeah, that's the norm. That's my norm, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not too close. I mean, it depends. It depends. If it's genuine, if I see it's genuine, yeah, I'm open. I'm wide open.
Right, but if it gets...
Well, if there seems to be some disingenuity there, then no, nobody gets across.
So you are, at the moment, a little still gun-shy, not at the point where you feel so okay that you can let people just walk in easily. I understand completely, Luke. I understand. This is it's perfect that you could recognize that and see that.
Is there something wrong with that?
No. You're doing the best you can, and you're doing it as long as you can, and when you're ready, you'll step out of that place. And when you're not ready, if you never get ready, it's fine. You're a major contribution to the world just by being the person you are, because everybody likes you. You know?
Well, that's nice. It's nice to hear, and I really appreciate your effort and what you just expressed, everybody. And I'm not suffering from looking for any kind of love or affection. I don't think so anyway. I don't feel anything like that.
Yeah, right.
But I was just, again, I don't hear this type of conversation.
I know you don't. Sure.
Much on the radio or anywhere else, really, expressing men exposing like the gentleman who called prior to that. And the fact that you are
you using...
you're talking about people in relationships who establish a relationship out of their own guilt.
Yeah.
For not hurting someone. That's profound stuff, man.
Yeah, I know it is. Can you, are you, you want a cell phone or are you in a...
Unfortunately, I am.
Not unfortunately. You have the phone in your left ear or your right ear?
To my left ear.
It's in your left ear, right? Can you imagine, just this minute, that you had a guy like me somewhere around, and for 1 minute, and I'm going to offer this to everybody out there, can you imagine that you take this guy who's 6'3" and 245 pounds, me, and you somehow can hug him for the New Year's, like this is New Year's Eve? And you could just put your arms around me and I could put my arms around you right now. Can you just take one breath imagining that taking place? Because a lot of people who come by here get that, you know? A lot of people who come by here get that kind of feeling. Can you just imagine that for a minute?
Yeah, I got
okay, hold on there. Hold on a second. Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to violate all rules now. Whew. I got you now. You ready? I'm going to put a kiss on your cheek.
All right, whoa, slow down, man.
There it is. Hang on a second. I already did it. Hang on a second. Hang on. Don't be scared.
It was okay.
Listen to this. Listen to this. I kiss my cousins all the time, and they love me.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, fine.
Yeah, you got. It's okay. You got past it. You didn't die, and you didn't become a homosexual just because I kissed you.
I hope not. If anybody who's listening to this program, I don't think I'm a homosexual. Those who know me, boy, you really did a thing to me. My wife is listening. She will kill me.
She'll kill you because I hooked you and I kissed you on the cheek?
No, she'll be killing me for just giving a call and opening up in a way that I don't normally open up to anyone.
I know you don't. So why would she kill you for this?
Because she'd be just surprised.
Yeah, and to know that you've got the potential for it. So what I'm going to tell your wife is I'm going to invite your wife to come in the studio here, and she could sit here on the microphones with us, and then you could call in, and then the two of you could talk this way that you don't normally talk.
Oh, man, that would, you know what? I can't say I wish you were serious, but that would be really a profound thing.
All right, well, wait a minute. I can make that happen.
No, it's
Luke,
right.
Luke, I know you think that I'm kidding you.
Her and I personally, just
you and your wife are invited to sit in on one of our performances anytime you want in February. All you have to do is send me an email. I will set up the day.
Okay. All right.
I will make that happen. It would be so nice to meet you, and I'm going to hug you. And you got to watch out. I may kiss you on the cheek.
No, don't do the kiss thing.
All right, no kissing. I'll kiss your wife. Is that okay with you?
Well, I don't know about that either.
Geez, I'm really, I got nobody to kiss.
But cool, yeah.
Well, I have to settle for my cousin or Ben or somebody like that. You never know. Or maybe somebody else will come in. Hey, we've got to be.
Armand, you do a great job.
You're
a
beautiful
great job,
man.
And
Luke, thank you.
Like I said, for years. And this piece you mentioned yesterday about intimacy needing in relationships was very, very profound as well. So, and again, your co-host, I thank you both, and I'll continue listening.
Thank you, Luke.
Thanks, Luke.
You're so welcome, both of you. Have a great New Year.
Thank you so much.
Hey, I want to wish both of you guys a happy new year. And it's such a pleasure working with you guys. I've learned so much, and I feel really honored and blessed to be part of this team.
You too. I feel like I'm really part of a team here, and it's an exciting year coming up.
And to all of you out there, I want to thank you very much. Do connect with us on Twitter, however you do that. Armand Dimele, ArmandDimele. And all the other things that I would normally say to you. My best to you all. And the best to everybody at the WBAI, the studio. Andrea, Gary, Reggie, etc. Hey, be back with you next year. I'll come back next year and I'll do another broadcast.